episode of the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank Arcuri.
And we'll be right back just so that we can come back and emulate the Sabres for a second there.
Ah.
We'll talk more on them as well. We're going to hit a lot of things here today. Lindsay D'Arcangelo, The Athletic, joins us here as well today. Lindsay, thanks for coming in.
What's up? Happy to be here.
And we're happy to have you here, and we're happy to talk about, quite frankly, anything about everything. I mean, it's peak sports season. I mean, yeah, the Bills had their bye week, and it's probably the most enjoyable thing. I mean, the Sabres, how they won last night, it's a good thing they're not playing to bring it down. And also, I mean, you have the Sabres, you have UB. I mean, the Buttes are in action as well, and they don't get enough love. And, I mean, Frank and I at WBNY covered them in their inaugural season. So there's always a soft spot there for them. And, you know, UB Hoops, men's, women's, the football team, looking to clinch the MAC East next week against a bad Bowling Green team. So they better. Honestly, where to start? Not sure. The easy way would be the Sabres and what they've been able to do over the last three games, taking 6 points from three of the teams in the top six and landing themselves fourth in the NHL standings.
Right. It's kind of surreal. I mean, I don't think anyone really I think people expected better, but I don't think they expected this.
At least right away.
Yeah, this has been one of those things where you can't count them out anymore. It's quite simply, that's how it is. And this is, let's see here. They go ahead and fall 1-0 to the Jets. They come back eventually in the third period. They were down 2 goals against Vancouver. They've been down 2 goals against Anaheim. They were down 2 goals last night to the Wild. And you can never count them out of things anymore. I remember sitting there in that Vancouver game. As a fan, I went down into one of the seats in the corner, and it was, I saw people starting to get up at 3 minutes and 30 seconds left, and they're still down two, and I'm thinking, amateurs. Because they're not dead to me. And I've come to that conclusion a long time ago, not just from last night. And I knew I couldn't count them out simply because they have the talent and the will to do it. Now it's just like, you're not leaving until the final second these days with this team.
No, they're competitive. And like you said, they're in every game, and whether or not they eventually come back or don't, you want to see what happens. And that is such a switch from last year to this.
I find it interesting that you say that they're more competitive. They were competitive even in the tank years, because there are games where there were a lot of one goal games, even, you know, 2 goals like 3-1 or 4-2, things like that. But at the same time, when it got to like 5 minutes left in the game, you could essentially say, this one's over. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't. You literally have to wait until the end of the game.
Maybe saying that they're not, or they're more competitive is lack of phrasing. I guess what I'm saying is they're more able to like pull it out. You know what I mean? Like, they couldn't pull out those games last year. They just, it's almost like they couldn't get over that hump, or whatever you want to call it. This season, they're scoring those goals. They're making, you know, those they're making those extra, I don't know, passes, shots, whatever, and the goals are going in.
There's a lot more confidence in this group.
That's a good way to put it too.
And I think a lot of it too comes down to the goaltending. It's gotten a lot better. Robin Leonard, a couple of years ago, he was good. He had, like, I think, a 923 save percentage in 2017. The two seasons ago, I think it was around there. And Andreas Nielsen, when he was the backup here, had a good year as well. But then last year, everything just went, you know, to hell pretty much, with Leonard having a really bad year. Chad Johnson was worse. And so you can never get that big save out of your goaltenders. Mm-hmm. Now you're getting it out of Carter Hutton and Linus Solmark. And it's not even just one. You're getting it out of both guys. Mm-hmm. You can go into each game knowing your goaltender is going to give you a chance.
Right.
And nowadays in the NHL, that's going to go a long way, because you've seen teams like Pittsburgh be able to roll two goalies when they won back-to-back cups, and Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, I still look at the Sharks as a team that can do that, because I'm a really big fan of Aaron Dell as a backup along with Martin Jones. You can even put Vegas in that with having Fleury and then all the other goalies that they had. But, you know, guys like Malcolm Subban and, you know, gives them a chance. So you're seeing, you know, that the Sabres are making these moves to keep up with what the NHL is trending towards, and now you're seeing the results of it.
And I think too, they themselves seeing how they're pulling these games out, seeing where they are in their standings, and that, as you said, has given them more confidence going forward and saying like maybe we are good, like maybe we can compete with the top teams in the NHL.
And they're even doing the things that they failed to do well much better this year. For example, you look at how Jack Eichel's the first player they're sending out in the shootout now. The man was 1-for-9 in his career before this season, and he's 2-for-2, perfect on both chances. Eichel even said it himself after the first shootout that, you know, that's not something that I've normally been good at. But what does Phil Housley do? He realizes, you're the captain. You're the face. You can do this.
Go get it done.
Go get it done.
And he has.
And he has Housley knows. He has the skill set to do it. Mm-hmm. Just go do it. Mm-hmm. And that is just one of the ways that it shows. And another one came last night. I mean, post-game, you hear Rasmus Dahlin twice during his post-game interview say, I love playing for this team. I love playing for this team. Mm-hmm. First off, we love you too, Swedish son of Buffalo. Second off, and more importantly, Brian Koziel had pointed it out, what was the comment from last year from Ryan O'Reilly? That it wasn't fun coming to the rink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it was one of those things where it was a very controversial quote, but very realistic. I mean,
he lost his love for the game.
Hockey's an 82-game grind. That's why, like, for example, when the Hurricanes do that little mini skull thing, I'm not going to get mad at that. You have fun in any way possible in an 82-game season playing a physical game.
They need to do anything they can to draw on fans anyway, so why not?
Oh, let's not take shots here, Frank. Okay, you can take shots.
Well, having fun. I mean, that having fun while you're playing, that happens, you know, across all sports. And, you know, if you're a team, you're not having fun. I mean, I don't want to drag the NBA in here because, you know,
we don't
really have an NBA team here to discuss. Yeah. But you look at the Warriors and the drama that's been going on with KD and Draymond Green, and I mean, they lost 3 of their last 4. And, you know, you wonder if that's part of it, if there's just this lingering stuff and they don't seem in the past few games to be having as much fun. I mean, because when they're having fun, they're blowing out teams.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I sit here like Burns and like, The Simpsons going, excellent.
Tear
the dynasty down from within. Now can we get it done with Bama? Let's go. Chop, chop.
Well, Bama first or New England? Which one?
New England.
Yeah, come on. New England Dynasty first.
I have to be a realist. I think Alabama would be the first one to go first. I mean, come on.
It's hard.
It's the Patriots, and Tom Brady's still alive, and he still has some sort of...
I like how you say he's still alive instead of he's still playing.
Like he's still, he's still alive. He's still playing. He's still 40, and the Patriots are having a down year at 7-3.
Yeah, it's depressing.
Yes. That's why I'm not banking on it. Everyone's saying, oh, Tom Brady's actually missing throws now. Nope. He's probably going to throw for 400 yards. Don't say that. Shut up.
Who they play today? Oh, no, they're on bye.
Yeah.
Right.
So. The whole division's on a bye. That's weird.
That is
kind of weird and almost kind of cool at the same time.
Yeah.
That it's just the same division, all 4 teams. They're off.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it matters this season because the Bills are dead in water. And now just the second worst team in the division. Take that, Jets. Way to prep for not Matt Barkley.
They didn't have any tape on him. That's why he was thrown all over the field.
I still can't believe that happened. That happened.
It did.
All right. But anyway.
I totally derailed the conversation.
You did what I normally do. It's okay.
Welcome to the Leftovers Podcast.
Yeah, welcome to the Leftovers Podcast. Everyone that listens to it is used to us doing something along those lines. But anyway, you look at the Sabres and you see how much fun they're having again and how much fun the fans are having again.
Mm-hmm.
There are fans that forgot how stressful it is to watch a hockey game. Well, welcome back, because this team's probably going to kill someone this year.
I like stressful hockey.
This team is going to give someone a heart attack and be the direct cause of a death. I hate to sound dark like that, but that is going to happen. Someone is not going to be ready for this, and they're going to watch playoff hockey.
Someone's going to die of a heart attack because the Sabres did something amazing.
Yes, but what I'm saying is someone's going to watch playoff
hockey. And their last words are, worth it.
Playoff hockey. Man, we
get to say those words right now. A quarter of the season in is a solid benchmark to be able to discuss what they are doing and how and what a team can be.
This was around the point where I was talking about with potentially firing Phil Housley, depending on where they were.
Yes.
I said right around 20 games. If they're below 10 wins, I think Housley's on the hot seat. They're at 12. And they're above 500. It's not like they're kind of right there. They are above 500 right now.
They are fourth. They're not just above 500, Frank. They're fourth in the league.
Yeah.
How much has that conversation flipped around Housley?
Quite frankly, it should. And it really did show that there was a lack of talent there, and Jason Botchwell did have a lot of work to do. And he went and did some of it. It's not done yet.
The scariest thing is it's not done, but it'll never be done.
I'm talking about this season's roster. There are still holes.
But for this year, it's like it's not done. And they're still fourth in the league right now.
Yeah, and that tells you that all you needed for Housley was get him some speed, because that's the thing that he wanted to employ in this team, was get him some speed, and therefore you will get more results.
And get him competent goaltending.
All
you need is competent.
That's right. Housley last year had two guys below the league average, and you saw what happened. I mean, the same two goalies were there a couple of years back, and they were, 81 points under Bylsma that year?
The first Eichel's rookie year, yeah.
It was 81 points.
Yeah.
Alive until the trade deadline. They took their bye week, and then plummeted because they lost to last place teams Colorado and Arizona.
Well, I think that was the next year.
No, because the next year they were just bad.
Was it?
Yep.
I don't remember. Are you talking first or second year under Bylsma?
First year. First year they ended up threatening.
They were a little.
Second year they took the step back, and that's why Bylsma got fired.
Well, because they also got. Because I remember, too, the team got hot in March that year.
Yeah, they went on some like random.
They had like a really nice streak going, and that propelled them up to 81 points. Because that was like right after they traded Jamie McGinn. It was something like that. Because I think because Colorado was bad in 2017, because they had that big jump last year.
They were also bad. Like they were not Arizona bad, but they were just as bad.
They were worse than the Tank Sabres in 2017.
I'm not talking about that Avalanche team. Course. Now I have to look it up.
Yeah, you do.
Because I say a lot of dumb things and I want to make sure that I'm right on this one. But either way, it's more or less the point of this is the last this is probably the most exciting season we've had around here for Buffalo since what? The 2011 season when they last made the postseason? Lindy was still the coach?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
What were you doing in 2011, Frank?
I was a senior in high school.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Thanks. Why did I ask you first? I was just going back to ECC and trying to get an associate's. I was figuring out my life.
You guys are youngins.
I mean,
that was before my daughter was born. The year before.
That's a hell of a benchmark to look at, too. Like, last time they were exciting, I
didn't know. It was like over 6 years ago. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's.
Because she's six now.
It's wacky to think about how they managed to do that. By the way, the next year they ended up with 70 points. I mean, 78 points. So I could see why I might be getting this confused. But I do know what this was. That first year under Bylsma, what happened with this team was, in March, that was where it looks like things just kind of go up and down. I need to find that bye week. There it is. Hang on.
I remember in Eichel's rookie year, they went on this little streak where they were winning games.
The only streak I see from that's not a good streak I found. This team went on losing streaks of 6-4 that season, probably derailing what they had in them.
Yeah.
But I think I did end up mixing up the seasons. I was wrong all along, I think. I think. Because the only win streaks that I see here are three games in April when, you know, they're long dead and out of the race.
Well, I think
and when I see losing streaks that are woof.
Are you talking about the Bosma's first year? Yeah. Well, I think in March they didn't really win. They weren't like winning like five in a row or anything. They won like three games, lost a game, won two, lost, and then like won three. It's like they were winning like 5 out of 7 things.
It was
like
Bosma's second year that losing streak.
Yeah,
it was because they beat St. Louis going into the bye week. They were in a playoff spot, and then it Chicago, then Colorado, yep, then and Arizona,
really bad, and they were really bad,
and then Nashville to end that losing streak. They got their revenge against Arizona, but then they plopped another 4-game losing streak into March.
Yep, and that
they did not get hot in March at all. We were both wrong. Welcome to the Leftovers Podcast. Can you see the esteemed people you are working with right now?
Hot, I was talking about the Eichel's rookie year. Yeah, the second year, yeah, everything just went to dad. And yeah, because they didn't end up making any trades at the deadline.
They didn't, no.
How relieved must Eichel feel right now? Just not even relieved, but also sort of rejuvenated to have this happening, to be a part of it, to finally see this was the plan. And to finally see it sort of starting to come together, where, I mean, I can't imagine for him how he must feel.
I think it's coming out in his play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're seeing a guy who isn't afraid to make the tricky pass. He isn't afraid to go ahead and take the shot. He still leads his team in shots. Not many people know that. Eichel leads the team in shots. And it's not even really that close. Skinner's just scoring on a greater clip because he's getting higher quality chances. This team really does seem to have the makings of something special here because of how they're doing it, how everything is going for this team. How is it all working? And here it is. Jack Eichel, 80 shots on goal this season, a 5% clip. That will go up. The second on the team trails him by 14 in Jeff Skinner.
Yep.
He has 14 more shots than the guy that has 14 goals on the season. So it's not a lack of trying. People saying he needs to shoot more. Well, there are chances.
No. Yeah.
Like, for example, last night there was a prime chance he had to shoot it. He tries to pass it back to Skinner, and it's a tricky pass. Skinner fumbles it, and there's no chance anymore instead of what was a 2-on-1. Like, that's a moment you want your guy to shoot that, especially when he has a good shot.
I think that's what people are talking about when they say he needs to shoot more. Not so much from a number standpoint, but when he has those opportunities, instead of trying to make the execute pass or whatever, you know, just let it fly.
He needs to increase his high danger quality chances.
He needs to just keep those right now, high danger chances.
Right now, yeah. Right now, he's more shooting for quantity and not quality.
I mean, I wouldn't say that.
I would say, but it's more so quantity, because a lot of times he's just shooting it. Which is fine. Obviously, keep shooting it. It's fine. But he's got to. But it seems like his goal total will skyrocket if he just gets better opportunities and he takes advantage of better opportunities.
But yeah, no. There's plenty of other factors with this team that are kind of flying a little under the radar. I mean, you're seeing a great season from Jason Pominville, the rejuvenation, 17 points in 20 games. Yeah, that's a clip that nobody saw coming this year from him. And a lot of people, I remember how ablaze Sabres Twitter got when they put Skinner, Eichel, and Pominville as that line. Everyone's like, Pominville, really? And I'm like,
and it works.
And it worked. And then we're all looking around going, really? Phil Housley's the NHL coach. We're the people on Twitter.
Yep.
Whoops. So.
Maybe he knows what he's doing.
Maybe he knows something that he knows a thing or two about this hockey game. But I mean, I've loved Kyle Poso this year. I think he has gone under the radar, a very underappreciated player this season. Yeah, he's still not going to be fast, but he looks smoother as a skater. He looks healthy again after that, you know, scare with the negative reaction to a medication that landed him in the ICU. He looks healthy this year. He looks like he is the guy that you brought in from free agency.
He's not. Yeah, we know. We should know this by now. He's not a foot speed guy. But he sees the game fast.
Sees the game fast. He still plays it fast.
He plays it fast. It's like Reinhardt. They play the game fast. The game slows down around them.
They just don't have the foot speed that you'd want to see there.
Whereas then you have guys like Eichel, Skinner, Mittelstadt, who are just really fast.
That conditional fourth is probably becoming a conditional third. Sherry's got 6 goals on the year in 20 games. That projects to over 20, which means
he has a 16.7 percentage shooting percentage right now.
Still projects. I'm thinking that you're losing that pick. Casey Mittelstadt has been snake bitten. He's been good. He's got 6 points on the season.
Yeah,
but you look at a player like that generating at least one dangerous chance per game, and you think that's going to eventually go in. Those are going to eventually turn into goals. They're not going to be just, you know, chances. They will end up on a highlight reel because they will be in the back of the net soon enough. And Mittelstadt knows it. You ask him about that, and he says there's no confidence issue. He says that, you know, he's just got to keep playing, and those pucks will go in. He knows that there's nothing wrong with his game. And defensively, has anyone really been yelling at a TV about Mittelstadt lately?
I've seen far less negative Mittelstadt tweets.
Yeah.
Than and I have.
You saw in you a while. Saw in the preseason the mess of a defensive zone player that he was, and now you look at him right now in the regular season, you're like, where'd it go? I'm cool with it, but where'd it go? I'm okay with this. I'm just wondering where that all went. And maybe that was more line mates than Mittelstadt himself.
I think some of it attributes to the line mates.
But you saw struggles from him in the defensive zone, and now you're seeing a guy who is not just good at fetching the puck on the back check, he is helping you get breakouts. Mm-hmm. You have several players now. Last year it was what? You can count on Eichel to get out of the zone and no one else? Now if you've got this puck on the stick of Mittelstadt or Eichel or Skinner or that Rasmus Dahlin kid, you know the puck is going into the...
He's pretty good with the puck.
Yeah, you know he's going to get into the opposing zone and you're going to be on the attack. Like anytime I see the puck on Eichel or Dahlin's stick, it's like, all right, what chance are we getting here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's an automatic almost. And it's so much more fun, as you were saying, Lindsay. It's more fun to watch this team, not just because they're doing well. Frank, what was the bar that I set before the season?
You wanted to just be able to watch the team.
Yes.
And have fun doing it.
I wanted basic competency.
Yeah.
And we're getting more than that from this team.
Mm-hmm.
Like last year, what we got from the Bills was competency. Competency also happened to break the playoff drought.
Well, that was like just an extra bonus.
Yes.
It was.
But I got competency. I didn't get a good team out of that. You knew that going into the playoffs, Jacksonville wasn't going to be an easy task.
I still say you should have won that game.
Oh, yeah, you should have. But, you know, maybe they get their revenge next week.
Josh Allen.
I don't know. But this Sabres team has given me far more than I asked for. And playoff hockey is going to put plenty of stress on everyone. And I say bring it on.
Yeah.
People need enjoyable stress in their life.
Yeah.
They need something to be able to yell at and swear at and be able to just...
And be happy with.
Be happy about being angry at something.
Yeah.
Is it messed up to say? When it comes out of your mouth, yes. But at the same time, I'm totally cool with it. But there's far more than just the Sabres. UB football, its season coming to a close, and a dagger to their chances of having some interesting bowl conversation after they got blown out by Ohio, and unfortunately, that conversation now comes to a close. Now it's pretty much go win the Mac and get yourself the best bowl that you can. And it's disappointing to see because UB would have been an interesting conversation point because you have 3 legitimate NFL prospects that you could sell about it, that you could possibly try to cheat towards getting closer to a New Year's Day game, trying to get into the New Year's Six. But now, well, those dreams are gone.
It stinks that it has to be just one game that knocks you out of that, you know. But I mean, I get it, and I get that's the way it works, but just one game. You just have to be on every single
Yeah, the college football landscape is never a pretty one.
Yeah.
Pay the players. But at the same time, UB still does have more than a legitimate chance at winning the MAC championship, if only because they're going to be one of two teams there. If you trip over Bowling Green, well, you deserve to not play in the championship game, because they are, in a lot of metrics, the second worst team in college football. So I expect that to be the case. But Tyree Jackson has been – he's been up and down at times in this season, but his ups far higher than what his downs have been as low points. And, Lindsay, I do believe I saw you had written something about Tyree.
I did a feature on Tyree for The Athletic
and
a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I feel like, though, that Tyree Jackson is one of those guys that you look at how Josh Allen was drafted in the first round last year, and a lot of comparables can be made in that sense, where he's got the big arm. He's got a huge frame. He is athletic. He is a guy who can make all those throws with velocity. And can he do it against, you know, players in the NFL?
Here's the thing about Tyree, which I don't think a lot of people realize how much work he puts in and how seriously he takes the game of football. And I do believe if he is told by his close confidants that coming back for another year will benefit his growth, he will come back to UB for another year. Because he's not the type of kid who's going to look at what he can get from the NFL right now, money or prestige or, you know, attention. That's not who he is. If he wants to improve his game, and I do think coming back, by the way, would be the most beneficial for him, he will come back. I firmly believe that after talking with him.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like this season would be the last chance that UB has in an explosive offense. I mean, if Jackson comes back, they have plenty of weapons still that they can look at and they can continue to use and continue to entertain the fans here as well. Go to UB games next year, people. I command you. I know I'm trying to tell you what to do.
There are people chirping in his ear. I know that as well. Maybe the wrong kind of people. But he's got a good head on his shoulders. And I think he knows. I mean, he said to me, one of the last things he said is that he's still young. He's still, you know, has one more year left of eligibility, and there's a lot more that he could learn. So he knows. And I personally think that he should stay. I think it would benefit him. And I know this quarterback class in this year's draft or 2019 draft is not that great, and he would probably get drafted higher up because of that. But I still think he should wait.
Yeah, I think that another year with UB would be another beneficial season for him. And at the very least, at minimum, the man is going to be drafted into the NFL. At minimum. I mean, if he has a down year next year, for example, that's still looking at a fourth, fifth round pick the way that he's played.
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to hurt his intangibles. He's still 6'7". He's strong. I don't want to compare him to Cam Newton, but they have a lot of the same build and the same strengths. He can improve on his accuracy and things of that nature, but I don't think one more year in college would hurt him.
Yeah, and also you can try to go ahead with UB, and, you know, if there are chances to add an opponent to next year's schedule, you can look at trying to put a Power 5 school in there for the sake of not just trying to make your statement as a team, but it would also help the tape of Tyree Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Get him some national spotlight a little bit. Yeah.
Get him a national spotlight. Let people know, like let other teams know, scouts know. Can he do it against a Power 5 school? And if he does, well, I'm sorry, but Rutgers isn't going to be a capable tape on that. So,
yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things. He wasn't highly recruited coming out of high school because he started growing towards the later part of his high school years. And I think once people saw his senior year unfold, I mean, they went to the state championship. They lost, but he had improved from his freshman year. They were 2-8, 2-9 or something like that. And by his senior year, they were going to the state championship. And so school started coming at the end of his senior year. Well, UB was there at the beginning of his senior year. And there were some high-profile schools in there, but he's very loyal. And he was told that they wanted to do the same thing at UB that he had done at Mona Shores, which is turn the program around, turn it into a winning program, leave a legacy, you know, build a dynasty and keep it going. And he wanted to be a part of that. I mean, he does, from what I've seen, he makes the right decision from the right spot. And I just have a good feeling that he will do the same in this regard. And I want to see him do well. I think he's a good kid, and I think he's got a lot of talent.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, not to sound self-serving here, but that gives us another year of having him here at UB and right around the corner and being able to watch him and see if there is another step in the growth. And, oh, also dropping points on MAC opponents. That's always a fun thing to watch, too. So, you know, sounds kind of selfish, but at the same time, it is something that can benefit the rest of the area, too. I mean, we've seen it this year that they are successful, and they're filling that stadium in record ways that we haven't seen ever. Mm-hmm. And that just goes to show you, you give Buffalo a team that can win, they'll fill whatever seats you give them.
Coming. Yeah. The UB women's, they had their season opener was on Wednesday night at home. And, I mean, they didn't sell out the entire alumni arena, but there was more people in the stands there than there normally is. There would have been last year or the year before that. I know they sold more season tickets this year. So winning cures all.
Winning brings
attention. And
for the programs at UB, the attention is fantastic. I mean,
it's nice to have that here.
We've got a school now around the corner that just rose a Sweet 16 banner.
Yep.
Like, a couple of years ago, I would have laughed at someone
that said... That'd be a dream.
Yeah, I would have laughed at someone for saying that. We have a team that's ranked in both teams are now ranked in the top 25.
I don't know if UB Women's is yet.
Well, they should be.
But I'll tell you what they do have.
Team that made the Sweet 16 shouldn't be anything to scoff at.
They have Sierra Dillard, who is already, you know, in the running for Naismith Player of the Year. Only player who's from a mid-major school. I mean, that's incredible to me. Just the national attention that Coach Jack, Felicia Leggett-Jack, is bringing to the area. And again, these coaches have come in with a primary goal of turning things around in the area, turning those programs into long-lasting dynasties, and building legacies. That's what we've needed. We have Coach Leopold, who's doing it with football. We have Coach Jack, who's doing it with the women's team. And then you have the UB men's team coach, Nate
Oates. Yeah.
Nate Oates. He's doing it with the men's team.
Hey, first off, national people, get your head on straight. UB should have more than one vote in the women's poll. Mm. Come on. Let's go. Figure it out.
The interesting thing is they play the Oregon Ducks today, who are number three. And that's going to be a huge test.
And they're the only other team with a first-place vote.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. That's at 5 o'clock today, so we'll see what unfolds there. But, you know, I think UB's team, they're good. They have Dillard. They have other players. They're also young. That might be their only Achilles heel this year. And they start slow. They're only two games into the season, but they start slow, and then they usually pick it up in the second half. They can't do that against Oregon.
I by the way, I love Felicia Leggett-Jack.
Isn't she great?
That woman makes me want to run through a brick wall every time I hear her talk.
UB
women. She is awesome.
She's so motivational.
She's intense, and it's just amazing to see it. Anytime, like,
it's pretty great.
You see one call go against the Bulls, and she is up someone's case right away, and it's amazing to see it. It's amazing to hear it. It's just like, oh yes, I just love how not just feisty, but like in command she is with everything. But she's not one of those college coaches where, like, the ones that I hate, that they're like so full of themselves.
Oh yeah.
And they just boss around kids and get paid to do it. No, she, like, anytime, like, she has to pull someone out, she will talk with them extensively, you know, try to help calm them down, get them back to their game, or, you know, find a way to hype them up to get their confidence back. Like,
there's
master
a lot
motivator.
Of respect mm-hmm. between her and the players. And some of the players who I've spoken to have told me the reason they chose to come to UB is because of Coach Jack, is because of the relationship she has with her players. It's a mutual respect.
Yeah, and it's something that in college sports is one of the most refreshing things that you can see. Mm-hmm. And you see it with Coach Jack, and you see it with Coach Oates, and with Coach Leipold. Like, all it is like you're seeing these guys and girls that are willing to play for the coach like that. And, I mean, we just saw one of the most ridiculous things this past week with Ed Oliver at Houston. A coach goes to try to physically take a coat off of a man because he's not active on the roster for the day because he's injured. Like, come on, what? We have, who was it? I think it was Baylor. The coach at Baylor is, like, you know, grabbing the face mask of one of his kids. Like, I'm sorry, but if that was me, the only thing you're catching is not my attention. You're catching these hands, and I'm getting kicked off the team because you don't touch me. Like, come on. Like, I'm a person. And, like, that's the one thing I hate most about college football. And I still hate that the players don't get paid a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But I hate that
that's a whole other podcast.
So much more.
Yeah.
I just hate that other aspect so much more. Like, college coaches, get over yourselves. And anytime you see a college coach flop, for example, in the NFL, and you see why. It's because, well, those are grown men, and they're not college students that you're getting to tell what to do anymore. Those people make more money than you do. Some of them do.
Well, that's why it's so exciting that we have three really good coaches here at UB right now.
And I want them all to be able to stay.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And Coach Jack says she's in it for the long haul, and I believe her.
I feel like she's that kind of person that would stay around for that, because
she likes what she's building here, and she wants to see it come to fruition. So I don't have any worries about her going. And you hope Nate Oates sticks around, and we'll see. But you know, you want them to start doing this, but then you want them to stay and cultivate it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we can't afford to pay the big money that they would get at, you know, a big time.
Like a Kansas or a Syracuse or a UConn or, you know, like things like that.
Nate Oates seems like he's going to stay for the long haul, too.
Again, it's about what they've been building.
Yeah.
And they want to be able to see that through to the end. And unless they are given an absurd kind of contract.
Oh, yeah.
From another school, which, by the way, college sports, that could happen.
Well, then
they still want to see it through to the end.
It becomes, you know, well, is it about the money or is it about what you set out to accomplish here? I mean, I understand it could be about both, but if you have a certain goal, you know, maybe down the road Coach Jack leaves when she feels, okay, I've done what I came here to do. And
like a steady pipeline every year.
Pass it along. Yeah.
And you have an assistant that you've groomed. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she told me, I actually did a feature on her over the summer, and she said, I go where I feel needed. And I stay for as long as I feel needed. Hmm. And I think she still feels needed here to do what she's doing.
I'm going to take care of this. We need you here forever, Coach Jack. All right, how'd that do? Did it work?
UB women's team also plays Stanford later in the year.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they got some big opponents.
Yeah, a couple top tens.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I'm for it.
If you give both of them games and you win the rest of your schedule, if those are your only two losses – by the time like the MAC tournament starts, they definitely are ranked.
I'll say it. In the same way that I thought about the Sabres these last three games, facing Tampa, Winnipeg, and Minnesota. If I can get a win out of one of those two games between Oregon and Stanford, that's good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't massive. Know how good Stanford is this year.
Right now they're ranked seventh.
Well, yeah.
And they're like 3-0 and
it would be a challenge for Oregon out there in the Pac-12 as well. So
yeah,
that would be a prestigious win, and we've already seen a UB school take an early season win against a top ranked school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw the men's team take down West Virginia in exhilarating fashion. I mean, Coach Nate Oates was on our airwaves the next day, and he said, "Can you imagine what happens when we get back to being able to hit our shots?"
Yeah, that's the thing, too. So when UB Women's played Niagara at home on Wednesday night, Niagara is not a good team. I mean, they've gotten blown out in their first two games. I think Bonnie's beat them by, like, 40 points, and they got beat by Iowa State by like 60 points. And so in the first half, they were back and forth, back and forth. It was like 30-something by the end of the first half. And I was like, this is not good. Because if they're going to be playing these bigger programs, you know, you need to sort of be on par. And they weren't hitting their shots. I mean, that was the main thing. So they come out in the second half, Dillard hits a three, comes back down the court the very next play, hits another three. And it's almost like it, like, infected the rest of the team, like, with her confidence, because then everything they were throwing up went in.
Yeah, both UB teams, it seems like they live by the three, they die by the three.
Yeah, and then they ended up beating them 88-61, which, I mean, it's only like a 20-point margin comparatively. I don't know why Niagara always gives them trouble, but
Big Four basketball will do that to you.
Yeah, but they pulled away, like, and they won with enough of a gap, I think, as people expected them to. But they can't start slow this afternoon.
Yeah,
against Oregon.
No, that's a whole nother story, and I'm sure that they'll be up to the task for that. I think that they can give the Ducks a game at minimum. So, or at least I'm hoping for that.
I hope so too.
So. It's fun to see that not just with UB, like, Big Four basketball last year was at a premium. You saw all four teams looking promising, and then you saw Canisius, Niagara, and the two of them just bomb it in the Metro mm-hmm. tournament. And then, you know, Bonaventure unfortunately gets smoked in the first round. The same night, though, that you see UB destroy Arizona.
That was great.
That was an amazing night because, I mean, we're getting down quickly about Bonaventure, and then the next thing you know, the Bulls are dropping threes on Arizona like no tomorrow, and we're just like, they're going to win this. This isn't even like, I don't even know if there's drama in this. This is just awesome at this point.
I mean, I know there's still plenty of season left to play, but it's going to be interesting to see where they're going to be ranked. I mean, I'm hoping they'll make it back to the NCAA tournament. I have a feeling they will.
Yeah.
But come that time, you know,
if they can stay in the top 25, that's one way to get in an at-large bid.
Yeah.
That's definitely one way to do it. So if they're going to do it, well, sticking around there will be one case for you.
Yeah.
But my big thing is that West Virginia win was a statement saying, we're still here.
Yeah.
And
like, we haven't gone anywhere.
We haven't gone anywhere. March was not a fluke.
Last year was not a fluke.
We hung with Kentucky. We drilled Arizona. You best remember us. And that's probably the most refreshing thing from that win was,
we're coming back.
We're here.
Yeah.
We haven't left. And now you better recognize. So now I hope the UB women can have that sort of a statement here. Hey, we made the Sweet 16 last year.
Mm-hmm.
Where we haven't gone anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We just beat Oregon. You better recognize it. If that were to happen, well, I think they're getting more than one vote in the polls.
Yeah, the only difference there is they lost some valuable seniors last year, mm-hmm. and they're a much younger team. But if they can figure it out, they're quick, they're really scrappy on defense, and if they could figure it out just to get out of this slow start, they're going to be competitive
and it's,
with the bigger schools.
It's fun to be able to and by the way, Buffalo fans, we're throwing everything at the table here for you. I mean, you don't have to worry about the Bills this year. I mean, I'm already looking at the draft. I already talked with two people over the weekend on the draft from hosting a couple shows this week. By the way, if you're looking at the draft, I hate to say it, but let's watch some Alabama football because Jonah Williams apparently is the real deal as an offensive lineman. He can play tackle or guard. I'm excited for that. And it's not sexy, but who cares? This is a substance draft for them.
It's needed.
That's going to be a substance draft for them.
Yeah, why do people get mad if you draft an offensive lineman in the first round? I mean,
it's not offensive not lineman, a sexy defensive pick. Lineman. Yeah, it's not a sexy pick.
Sexy, but it's
that's
you know
what people want though. That they want the sexy pick.
They want the flashy. And
yeah, but who do you get married to? Do you get married to the sexy chick who kind of flames out after a few dates, or do you go with pretty girl who's got a nice job and if you're looking for something long term?
To some guys, it's the sexy one.
I know. Who am I talking to here?
And that's how you draft a bust, Frank.
Exactly.
Come on.
Aaron Maven.
But how many broken relationships have we had?
I might hurt you. Yesterday, Kyle played Dominic the Donkey on the air, and I wanted to punch him then. And I don't know if it was a faster reaction with me here or with him. You bring up Aaron Maben. Ugh. Fun fact for you, Lindsay. I threw a pizza at the TV when they drafted Aaron Maben.
Really?
Yes. I wasted a pizza slice. That's how mad I was.
I've never gotten that angry over it.
I was also a child.
Yeah, okay, well, that makes sense.
I was in high school, but at the same time, I was so mad.
I was in high school, you know.
Manuel was the one I was most irritated at. I just didn't understand that at all.
Yeah, that's a different podcast.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, we could talk about draft busts all day and have plenty of content for, like, a series.
Mm-hmm.
Frank, write that down. We might have a series. Just bring in a different guest every show for a series of draft busts.
Let's go over each team.
Yep. There you go. Ugh. Woof. But yeah, no, we're offering plenty of alternatives here for the Bills, and there's also the one that is a defending champion. I mean, Frank and I covered the Buttes in the NWHL in their inaugural season at Harbor Center. Now it is a fan base. It's a rabid one. They sell all the jerseys and everything in the Sabres store. And first off, I love that they do that, and they include the Buttes in a lot of the promotions. But what's up with them lately? They've lost three straight.
Yeah. You know what? Part of it is the fact that their games have been so spread out. Their home opener was back, I want to say, November 3rd.
It looks like their games this year, October 7th, then 13th.
Was it October
3rd? Yeah, it was October 7th at Connecticut, but then October 13th was their home opener against Connecticut.
Okay, I was way off.
They swept Connecticut, but then they lost twice to Minnesota. They lost to Boston. They faced them again today. Hopefully they can get back to 500 there. And, like, you see them sign Shannon Zabatos. I mean, the last thing I had seen from her, unfortunately, was getting deked out of her jock in a gold medal game. But you knew people who followed that tournament in the Olympics knew who she was.
Oh, she's arguably the best goalie in the world.
Yeah, arguably the best goalie in the world. And you're just looking at that and go, wait, she's here?
Like, she's Buffalo.
Yeah.
That's pretty badass.
It is pretty badass. Especially and she's only played in men's leagues. One of the things, her learning curve, she said, is a different way that women play than men. And how, I mean, hockey's hockey, but there's a different way the game is played with women. And just shooting, things like that. And it's almost like her
timing's off. Yeah.
And that she's used to the faster pace.
Yeah.
Not just a faster pace, but also, I mean, it is a more physical game.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot more crashing, a lot more jostling, a lot more, you know, sometimes dirty play with the sticks and everything like that in front of the net, and that's going to happen. But in the NWHL, the rules are tuned to a different way, and, you know, it is what it is. Like, hockey is still hockey, and she will end up getting it if she is good enough.
She will.
I mean, poor comparison here, but it's like asking someone who's played in college, for example, to play for our trash team in Barley. The speed's off, and it's not necessarily that they're worse because of it. It's just that, you know, they're not used to the slower speed.
Mm-hmm.
They're not used to having it be a little more lax. They're not used to the lack of talent. And I say that as that part of the comparison.
I love to test out this theory.
Yeah, that means you're not playing a game, Frank. But, you know, but
well,
at the same time,
I stand by.
She still has played against the best in the world.
Yeah.
The Olympics.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it will come back to her,
yeah,
I do believe.
I do too. And like I said, I was at their home opener, and they looked unbeatable the way they crushed Connecticut. Now, obviously, Connecticut is not one of the best teams in the league right now. I feel like
Connecticut's had a lot of problems.
I think they're
lately.
Last. Yeah, they're last.
They were last year too, and it's just like they're kind of a team without a bit of a
direction.
Without a direction, a team without a compass, and it's unfortunate to see that.
What I was excited to see is the Buttes play the Whitecaps in Minnesota. They had, you know, a few weekends ago, they went there for a doubleheader. And they lost both, but only by one goal. I mean, they're getting their shots. They're just not going in the net. They pretty much had the same amount of shots. And then you look at Minnesota, who's 6-0 right now. They're really good. But part of the reason is their players, the Whitecaps were a team that's been around before they joined the NWHL. They've been a team that's just played competitively. It was started by a former Olympic hockey player who wanted to continue her career after college, and so that's where this team began.
Nice.
So they've played together. They've been playing together. So they have things
so this
down.
This is a veteran team.
So so you're looking at the Buttes, and you know there are some new pieces this year. The people who have come from other teams. We got two new goalies. There's still a lot of things I think that are trying to come together, but I do think they'll figure it out. And I think the way the schedule works, the games are so spaced out, and I think the lack of consistency hurts them. But if you talk to head coach Rick Seeling, he'll tell you that they're waiting to sort of come and just start figuring it out. Four games into the season? This will be their fifth this afternoon. They're playing the Boston Pride again.
Yep. Boston has always been
Boston's got a pretty good team. So, I still think they'll be competitive, and I do think when they do play at home, they're a different team because they thrive off of that crowd.
Yes.
So, we'll see.
It's a nice crowd that they have there.
It is. Their season opener, I think they tripled the amount of people in the stands that they did the year ago. At least that's what Nick Faddy, the general manager, told me.
No, that's incredible to see that kind of.
It was pretty packed.
More to the point of you give Buffalo a team that can put up some excitement and get you some wins, they will pack the stands for you. And if you can give, especially with what has happened with the Sabres, for example, over the past 5 years, you give them a hockey team that was at least competent, and they will fill the seats for you because they were forever grateful for that. You looked at a team that in the NHL was splitting their fan base because of a tank, and the Buttes show up, and then people are like, a hockey team that's trying to win? I'm in.
They're 2-3 right now. They're still trying to figure it out. It's entertaining hockey either way.
And that's the other thing is that it is entertaining. It's free-flowing. It's offensive chances galore. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't tried checking one of those out, I highly suggest it.
And seeing Sabatos play in person is a treat.
I've got to watch her practice. We happen to play at Harbor Center, and I've gotten to watch them practice. And I could see how skilled she is, even at a practice. I'm just like, I'm taking the time right now to just appreciate this. I'm here too early, and I don't care. I'm gonna take in a Buttes practice. Why not?
Yeah.
And it's awesome to see that they can get that kind of a high profile talent into this league, and that's hopefully a good thing for this league. I've had my questions about can they sustain it. Would there be a possible merger with the CWHL? Those are things that have been questions in my mind because.
I think those are questions we all have, and it would be beneficial for the players and the league itself if they were to combine. They could afford to pay better salaries and expand fan bases. So I've heard that Dani Ryland, the commissioner, the woman who started the NWHL, is considering it. They're in talks, but nothing's really come of it. So I think it's just something to keep an eye on. But it would be beneficial overall if they want the NWHL to keep growing and to be sustainable. Something's going to have to happen.
And I mean, even the CWHL, they have a team in China. I'm pretty sure travel costs are not necessarily what I would call a good thing there. And it makes me think that it would make even more sense having one league have a team in China. The other has five teams, and you want to see more games on a more regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Plus variety for the players. I mean, you end up playing the same three or four teams, a handful of times each year. It starts to get a little...
Create divisions and see what the alignment looks like, and that would be something cool to watch out for. And then you can get the NHL teams to help out with more of the fan base and try to get more people engaged in the sport and more people watching as a possible combined league would be there. Let's make these things happen.
Yeah,
there's ideas.
Where's my money to say these things and make it happen? All right. All right, just pay me up a million bucks.
The only thing that would keep it from happening is egos.
Yep.
You know,
ego is dangerous.
So,
unfortunately, ego is dangerous. I mean, not with me or Frank.
No, you guys don't seem like
that. I make fun of myself all the time. Mostly because I deserve it, and I say stupid things. I mean, I was once paid to say the word pudding out of context, no reason. That happened.
Yep.
Do I dare ask?
I just wanted to say something stupid because I get jealous that Skip Bayless gets millions of dollars to say something stupid.
Yeah.
So I just went with the first thing that came to my head, and I don't know why it was that. I broke Frank.
I was laughing.
We had to stop recording.
I was laughing.
So
I lost it.
So yeah, no. And that's not even the dumbest thing I've said. I, on record, 1 year ago, said it was a good idea to put Nathan Peterman in.
You did.
That was not good.
Well, what did the coaches see during preseason that gave them so much confidence in him? He obviously performed different in practice. He's one of those.
He's just not a gamer, it looks
like. When you get out for the actual game, it's like you're skittish. You just are throwing checkdowns completely. You're not looking to the left side of the field at all.
I think the Bills broke him. They broke him. They broke him by throwing him in against a team out west with a great pass rush. And, you know, like the people that were saying, like, hey, we should start Matt Barkley still. And I think head coach Sean McDermott made the right call saying, we're starting Josh Allen if he's healthy.
Well, that's what
people don't remember something. The Jets don't have a pass rush.
Right.
There's a reason he looked that good. And, for example, when Allen looked good against Minnesota, yeah, they have Danielle Hunter, who leads the league in sacks, but they didn't have Everson Griffin. They had some injuries along the D-line, so they only had one guy to key on.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, the Bills hang 27. Starting to notice a pattern here. People don't remember that pattern. So you're not getting it against Jacksonville. That's going to hurt. I hope that Josh Allen is at least 100% before that, so that if he does get hit, because he's going to get hit, that he's okay. I'm done with the Bills. Done with the Bills there. Sabres play 3 times this week. That's going to be interesting. The Buttes get to come home next on December 8th against Connecticut. I got the schedule right there in front of me. Ooh, they get... I'm not seeing this right. I am seeing this right.
Are you seeing this right?
They play 6 straight home games.
I told you the schedule is weird. The schedule is weird.
I wanted to make sure I was seeing that right. And
then they're all spread out.
To be fair, they've also played 4 of their first 5 away from Harbor Center, right, away from Buffalo. So this is going to be their chance to make it up. By the way, they get a KeyBank Center game.
Yeah.
On December 29th.
That's going to be cool.
So let's try to fill that in, fans. Let's try to fill that game up. We're going to start that petition right now. We're going to try to fill that game up. So, Lindsay, thank you for coming in. Thank you for talking all things with us.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
And that's what we try to do here. I mean, we're not in it for the money. We're here to have fun. that's how it goes. Thank you out there for listening on to the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
I'm Frank R. Curry.
And you've been listening on demand at WGR550.com and through the radio.com app. Sabres have 3 games this week. UB looks to clinch the MAC East against Bowling Green. And then they get the MAC Championship after that. And then you've got the basketball season starting up. I don't have the schedules in front of me. I'm sure they're at least playing this week, hopefully at Alumni Arena. Get out there and watch some sports. It's peak season. Let's get at it. And, well, if you're willing to, take in a Sabres game. It's not for the faint of heart anymore. We'll be right back.